Now it's time for our weekly chat with Labor MP Andrew Little.
This week with Health Minister Andrew Little, apart from drug testing at festivals, I asked him more about health the reforms made to the health sector, the Prime Minister's declaration of a climate emergency yesterday, and New Zealand's reaction to Chinese foreign spokesperson Zhao Lijian posting a doctored picture of an Australian soldier on Twitter. But I began by asking the Minister for more details on drug testing. I kind of want to kick things off this week by talking about the pill testing legislation that's passed in Parliament yesterday. So before we go into the details of this, why was this criminalised in the past?
It wasn't pill testing so much as possessing classified drugs as a criminal offence under our Misuse of Drugs Act. Outfits like Know Your Stuff have been trying to do over the last few summers is provide drug testing services so that people can test the substances that they've got to see whether they are what they have been told they are and that they're safe. But the people carrying out the drug testing, while they're in possession of the drugs they're testing, are technically, or not technically, but they're in fact breaking the law. So this was a way of providing protection for those carrying out those drug checking services so that they're not susceptible to criminal prosecution. And likewise, event organisers and hosts of music festivals and concerts, they also will now be protected from criminal prosecution because they would be liable under the Misuse of Drugs Act for allowing drugs to be on premises that they control. So that's the way the law works.
These changes, you said it would only last for the next 12 months. Why is this only one small change instead of a long-lasting one?
We wanted to get something in place for the summer music festival now. So it deals with an issue that has been around for a long time, which is making sure that actually you can have drug checking services, knowing and accepting the reality that at these sorts of events, there are substances that are passed around and people may not necessarily know what they are. But there is a bigger question, which is outside music festivals and concerts. Actually, there's a lot of stuff on the streets that the safety of which, people just don't know. So we do want a broader solution, but we want to take time to consider that and consult over it and get input on it and make sure that it's fully debated through Parliament with a conventional law change rather than one going through urgency. So we've gone for a short-term fix just to cover us for the next summer, and then we're working on the longer-term solution that we'll put through a proper process, and that'll take the best part of 12 months to get that together.
So could we say this summer is a trial for even longer-term drug testing on the streets?
So you could say it's a trial. I mean, we are committed to the longer-term and permanent reform to enable this. Well, to enable people to get substances that they purchase or come across, even if it's illicit, to actually get them checked out so that they are safe. And we know that there are people who are using substances that are risky and that are unsafe. And we certainly see overseas, including in Australia last summer, people getting pretty seriously ill, in fact dying, because of using substances that they just don't know the composition of or the progeny of. So we want to give that protection not just to those going to music festivals but to anybody purchasing stuff who they have some doubt about the safety of.
Right, but when you say you want a more permanent fix on drug testing, what would you like to see?
So that regardless of where you are, what time of the year, whatever it is, if you have a substance, you've been told that it is something, you're not sure, or you've been sold a substance and you just don't know what it is, you can go and get that tested, and the person carrying out the testing is not liable to criminal prosecution. That's about accepting the reality is there are some people who do use drugs. There are some people who experiment with them. That's just a human reality. We haven't managed to stamp that out. We're probably most unlikely to. But we want to know if people are doing that sort of activity, that there is some safety valves for that. They can check out what it is they're potentially ingesting and then can make a decision about whether or not they consume it or not. I think the other thing is that contact with a checking service as an opportunity to get a bit of education about drug use generally. So the opportunity for a conversation to say, you know, this stuff's really not good for you, or is there something else going on? Are there addictive behaviours? Do you need some help with that? So it's a health intervention that I think has the potential for much longer-term benefits.
National Simon Bridges said in Parliament during the debate on this law yesterday that this change over the summer only normalises Class A drugs. What do you make of this?
Well, I don't think it does. I mean, this stuff is pretty much kept under the radar. But the reality is we know that there are some people who go to big events like this and they consume illicit substances. That's just a reality. It's the way it's been for many, many, many years, decades in fact. The kind of legal framework we've got at the moment where that is effectively criminal behaviour hasn't stopped people doing it. We've already given a signal in changes to the Misuse of Drugs Act last year that we want the police to take a health approach as opposed to a criminal justice approach when it comes at least to possession offences. If there's more serious offending involving drugs, then police can use their full powers a little. But if it's just people possessing and using, we would rather the police encourage those people to seek health advice and get a health intervention as opposed to banging them up in jail. That's just the difference between us and the National Party, I guess.
Moving on to the practicality of this legal change, for festival organisers, considering there hasn't been something like this being legalised before, is there going to be a way for festival organisers to check whether the drug testing service they want to use at their festivals are fully legitimate?
There's only a couple of services or outfits that can carry out the stuff. There's Know Your Stuff is the main one, and I think the Drug Foundation does the odd sort of testing. And I think in terms of getting a permit from the Director General of Health under the new law, the Director General is going to make sure that whoever carries out the testing has the competency and capability and the gear to do it. So it's not just any old Joe Bloggs, like a drug pusher, who can turn up and say, oh, I want a permit to do this. That sort of stuff will be checked out, pretty smartly. So I'm confident that the scheme that we've got in place and the law that we passed yesterday will cover off those sorts of risks.
But then, as you said, there aren't a lot of drug testing services in the country. Mm. Is there going to be any help for them to cope for demand in case it increases over the summer?
Yeah, I think the aim is that they'll get around the music festival, so they're not all at the same time. And outfits like Know Your Stuff, they've been doing this for a while now. They do it largely with the help of volunteers and with people who know what they're doing. Know Your Stuff is a credible organisation, as I understand it. They've got a good relationship with the police. They know what they're doing. And so I think festival organisers, event organisers, can be sure that with an outfit like that, they're getting a trusted partner who can do drug checking services. And that's what we want.
Moving away from drug testing now, I want to talk a little bit more on the health system reform. You said on News Up Nation over the past weekend that you would that there was going to be a new health authority called Health New Zealand set up for closer oversight of DHBs. So what's the difference between that model and the current way of using the Ministry of Health?
Well, I know the Ministry of Health does pretty much everything. So it's responsible for the DHBs who run the hospitals, and so they provide all that funding. They kind of monitor and have oversight of primary health care, so the GPs and the community organisations that provide frontline health, the sort of people you turn up to get checked out, hopefully before you need to go to hospital. They do all the policy for all elements of healthcare, whether it's dental, whether it's whether it's cancer policy, whether it's whatever condition. So they do pretty much everything. And I think the problem with that is that they don't. In their efforts to try to do everything, we're kind of missing a trick on some things, like getting the best we can out of the hospitals and the DHBs. So by having an outfit like Health NZ, whose job is kind of focused on the good operations, good financial performance, good clinical results across actually healthcare and focus on the activity of healthcare. That's quite a discrete and obviously very vital function that has to be carried out. But in terms of policy thinking about innovation, about new health treatments and how we embrace those and how we fund them, the ministry will hold on to that. We'll have a Māori health authority, which will work with Māori health providers and with the rest of the health system to make sure that the needs for Māori are being properly met and our obligations under the treaty are being met. There is a question about the extent to which they can commission, that is to say directly fund activities, and that's a debate we have to have. And we also want to have a public health agency, which will probably be part of the revamped ministry. Public health are all those population-wide issues and campaigns on, like, you know, trying to reduce smoking, trying to reduce alcohol abuse, that sort of stuff. You want a focus on that. So it is kind of looking at the range of functions getting some focus around each of them and then making sure there's integration as well. What we're doing at the moment is too diffuse and we're just not getting the results that we need.
Moving on to the government declaring a climate emergency in Parliament just yesterday. That's a quite small scale, with the Prime Minister announcing that the public sector will only replace its fleet with electric vehicles and phasing out using coal boilers. So if it's an emergency, why not even more sweeping changes?
Yeah, I think that you've talked about just the public sector stuff. So that is about saying, look, if the politicians in Parliament are going to declare a climate emergency, the government has to provide a bit of a lead on this. So in spite of us, you know, we talked a lot in the last 3 years about, you know, converting the government car fleet to electric vehicles or as many as possible, and we actually didn't get very far. So this is a bit of an impetus to do that, and there is serious work now on of the 16,000 odd vehicles in the public service fleet at actually getting as many of those electric as possible. Likewise, actually converting those boilers, and whether it's schools, hospitals, whatever. I'm surprised to see the number of coal-fired boilers we still have in public institutions. That will make a significant difference. The other one is actually ensuring by 2025 that government departments and any property that they occupy, it has to be a building that meets the maximum green standards. That will make a significant difference. The other stuff in terms of other broader transport, private transport and what have you, actually doing everything we can to build up our electric car fleet now means that we build the basis of a second-hand electric vehicle market in a few years' time. So that's the reason the government will do what it has to do. We know that in other areas of transport, particularly heavy transport, there's work already going on about, you know, the role that hydrogen can play, the role that more rail can play, and electric rail. The big challenge for our country is, of course, what happens in agriculture. We have a partnership relationship with the agriculture sector, principally through Federated Farmers, where work is already going on to look at how we, you know, reduce methane emissions and those sorts of things. We have our Independent Climate Change Commission in place now. Their job is to do, you know, provide an audit, provide advice and recommendations and guidance on the initiatives and measures that the government should be taking and promoting. All of that is in place. And so, look, it's not just confined to what the Prime Minister said as part of the climate emergency declaration. There's other activity also going on.
Right. Moving on to my final question of the day. Now, Australia recently had a public spat with China over a doctored image being posted on Twitter by the Chinese foreign spokesperson, and now New Zealand has seemed to be involved in this much more quickly than what we see during the past couple of months. Is there a change on how New Zealand interacts with China now?
No, I mean, we value the relationship, we value the trade relationship. We know that China, there are issues about China and some activities that go on inside China. I think what was unusual about this is, in spite of all the breast beating that goes on by some countries, we've never seen China do the sort of thing that they've done in this case, which in their, the relationship between Australia and China is not good, but we've never seen China do something as crass and as appalling as putting out a doctored image to give some impression about, you know, Australia. That is a very unusual thing for a country to do when they are kind of at odds with another country. And given the significance of China, now that is an extraordinarily unusual thing to do. Australia took offence at it, and we're a close ally of Australia. I have no qualms about us calling out that conduct. We have a good relationship with China. We want to continue to have a good relationship with China. It's a very important country. But even as with some of our closest friends, if we think about the US, for example, if there is conduct that oversteps the mark, then I think we owe it to ourselves to call that out, if only as a measure of our own conscience.
That was Labor MP Andrew Little. The Wire.